welcome to Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Show Ali and Josh Goldberg with you as the Blue Jays get punched in the mouth a little by the visiting Twins for game one of three down at Rogers Center. They drop this one 7-3 to Minnesota. And like Ben said, you can text us at 590-590. Leave your name and location. We can give you a shout out on the air, but really anything you want. And tonight, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., yes, he did retake the major league lead in homers, right? He clobbered the no-doubter to left field for his 46th home run of the season. And Josh, we can have that Triple Crown AL MVP conversation later on if you really want to. It's a pretty, you know, all things considered, a hot-button topic these days. But the real story out of tonight's game has got to be Hyunjin Ryu, right? Like, we got the ineffective Ryu once again. Another pretty disastrous outing for him. He went two innings pitched, allowing five hits, five earned runs, one walk, two strikeouts, two home runs. You heard the back-to-back shots from Jorge Polanco and Josh Donaldson. What do you do with Ryu at this point, right? Like, I remember a few games ago after Alec Manoah carved up the Rays, Rob and I got a few texts suggesting we were idiots for saying that Ryu might be the fifth starter on this ball club. And sure, maybe at the time that was a little prisoner of the moment, but at this point, where we are right now, right? I think I'd seen a tweet. Here it is from Shai, Sportsnet's own Shai Davidi. He tweeted out to say, on September 6th, Hyunjin Ryu threw six shutout innings versus the Yankees, allowing only three hits with six Ks. In two starts since, against Baltimore on the 11th of September and Minnesota tonight, he's allowed 12 runs on 13 hits and just 4 1/3, right? So, like, how can you possibly look at those numbers, even though they're across just two games, and what he's done recently, and say you at least feel comfortable when he's on the mound?
Yeah, you can't. He was awful tonight, and he was awful against Baltimore, and it's really jarring to see a pitcher who's, generally speaking, his entire major league career, when he's been healthy, he's been really, really good, if not great, for the most part. We saw it last year. He was a deserving Cy Young finalist. He was excellent virtually every single time he took the ball, and that's why it's so... Just you sit up in your chair and notice when he's struggling to the extent that he's struggling right now. And a lot of people will point and say, oh, well, his velo's got to be down. He must be hurt. Something's wrong. His fastball velocity average tonight was almost 91, which was almost a full mile per hour up on his yearly average of 89.9. Basically, all of his pitches were up in terms of velo tonight. He just was missing his spots pretty badly. His cutter was not effective whatsoever, and when that cutter's not cutting and not hitting its spot, it's basically a cement mix batting practice fastball. And lo and behold, a lot of those, you know, kind of floating cutters or just missed pitches were ending up over the fence. And like, what do you do with him going forward? Can you have him start his next ball game, which I believe would be in Tampa, if I'm not mistaken? And or maybe it would be the first game of the Twins series. Either way, I don't really know if you can start him. Do you just skip him in the rotation and have Ross Stripling pick up a start and then let him work on some stuff and give him some extra time to get things back in tune? Or do you maybe you put him on the IL, a phantom IL stint of sorts, where he misses 10 days and then works on getting the release point and the arm angle more consistent and figuring out what he needs to figure out? But pretty much there's no easy answers right now, because you're not really overflowing with options that can take his place. Ross Stripling, yeah, like, can he give you five and dive? Sure, probably, hopefully. Thomas Hatch, that's a lot to ask in a playoff race for a rookie to come up with limited major league experience as a starter. I guess, you know, technically still a rookie. You're stuck between a rock and a hard place, honestly, right now with Ryu. There's no easy answers.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the real problem, right? I mean, I see a text here on the text line from Joe in Thunder Bay, and I appreciate the text, Joe. And Joe really just says, even though Ryu isn't pitching well lately, he says, if only one of the five of the starting rotation is in a slump, you're doing good. It is nice to see Stripling, Merriweather, Pearson, and Baraki get some innings in. They all need the work. So we'll definitely talk about the rest of the pitchers we saw tonight a little later on. I kind of agree that if only one of the five of the starting rotation is in the slump, you're doing great. I think that's relatively fair. It's just if that one is Hyunjin Ryu, who is still on the roster after this season for another, what, 2 years? Mm-hmm. I want to say he has $20 million a year, so $40 million overall, if you're curious about his contract. Like, that's what's left for Hyunjin Ryu. And you and I, It's funny, Josh. I remember we were sitting in the studio doing the intro press conference for.
Remember
that when Ryu was introduced and you held up the jersey, and it was really exciting because it was the first kind of premier free agent addition that this era of the Blue Jays had really done, and it was the first big, you know, star, quote unquote, that this front office had gone out and gotten because they got their guy, and the agent was there talking about how excited he was to work with the front office and all these different things. And one of the things we had said even back then was that there was a little bit of concern on how this deal would age, right? It just feels that maybe it's aging. And hey, maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe I'll eat these words by the end of the season, but it does feel like it's aged a little prematurely to me.
Well, I think that the major concern was what was his health status going to be like over the course of a four-year deal at the age of, you know, 32, 33, really, because he was somebody who had dealt with a lot of injuries in his major league career. He's basically on pace here to start 30 games in a season for just the second time in his big league career and the first time since his rookie season in 2013. He made 29 starts a couple of years ago. He's had a couple of 24s, 26s, but he's missed a lot of time. And that was really the issue was, well, even if he was at a diminished velo, that if he was healthy, he would still be able to be, even if he wasn't an ace on the back nine of that deal, you'd still feel comfortable slotting him into your rotation and he'd be able to give you quality innings by and large. And we're not even 2 years into that deal, and there's real concerns just about what's going on with his stuff. Has there just been an erosion in the caliber of his stuff? I know that there's been some people pointing at, you know, since late June, his numbers post-sticky stuff, and he's been very inconsistent, as I'm sure a lot of pitchers have been since all of that went into place. But he has had some absolute gems in that point. You know, Shai's tweet a couple of starts ago against the Yankees in a really big spot, he shoved for 6 shutout innings. So I've kind of harped on this for a little while now. He just can't afford to miss his spots. And if he's not setting people up with the cutter and the fastball, either in or away, whether it's to a lefty or a righty, to set up the changeup and the curveball, then he's really going to have a lot of trouble getting outs. And right now, the fastball and especially the cutter have basically betrayed him. And the changeup has not been great either this year, relatively speaking. It's been one of the best changeups in baseball, by and large, for large stretches of his career, but it just hasn't done as much this year. The swinging strike rate is down on it. The opponent's batting average is way up on it. And I don't know if it's just that the changeup's not as good or it's much more appealing and easy to stay on when the cutter and the four seam aren't really having the desired effect that he needs it to have.
So let me ask you this then, Josh. I mean, we kind of talked around the injury thing, right? And like a lot of people have been texting in and tweeting in, you know, he had the forearm tightness a couple of starts ago, right? Like maybe what, 3 starts ago, I want to say, something like that, relatively recently, right? And he was saying that, you know, he came out of the game maybe a little prematurely, and it seemed to be okay. He didn't have to spend any time on the IL, no stint on the injured list for Ryu. And then, of course, we got the game one of the doubleheader against Baltimore where he was terrible, right? And luckily, the Blue Jays picked him up, and that was the 11-10 game with the Springer heroics in the top of the 7th inning and all those great things that we talked about last week or the week before or whenever that was. Time is a flat circle, Josh. But I will say, like, Ryu, I just can't help but wonder if maybe the injury is still bugging him. And I mean, like, maybe all the things you said about the slider and the cutter and the changeup, maybe all that's right. Maybe it's just his stuff has gotten a little bit worse over the last little while. But you can never 100% be sure when it comes to pitcher injuries, right? Like, I mean, God knows that when Jose Berríos is going to pitch his next start, we're all going to be kind of holding our breath out for the first couple of tosses, because even though they say he's okay, you never 100% know. So that's kind of where my head is at when it comes to evaluating the play of Hyunjin Ryu as of late.
You would have to, honestly, you have to hope that is a factor, because if he's healthy and this is what's happening, then that's way more worrisome than if the forearm or elbow is just not feeling right, or he's not trusting it quite as much because, you know, just for whatever reason, you know, when it comes to a pitcher, that would be more explainable than just, well, he's healthy, but he's stinking up the joint right now. There's no easy answer, like we're talking about, for just an erosion of your talent all of a sudden. It's like he's been Mozart here a little bit. And I have to assume that it is playing a factor, but I thought he looked pretty decent in the first inning, and then all of a sudden it just vanished on him, and he was struggling to really control at bats and just struggling really in general to get any feel or command for really anything in any situation. And you could kind of tell that even after the second inning, when the Blue Jays took a 2-1 lead, I'm sure you'd be lying to yourself if you said going into the top of the third that you felt like Ryu was in a good position to have a quick shutdown inning and to really back up scoring those two kind of gifted runs with two outs and an error really leading to them. And he just wasn't able to do the job. And like, I'm be curious what he has to say about it, because, you know, he's usually pretty methodical in his approach and his assessment of good or bad outings. And I'll be curious to see what he tries to assess and pinpoint as some of the big reasons for another huge struggle like he had tonight.
We'll probably hear a little bit from Hyunjin Ryu a little later on in the evening. We're here for another half an hour or so as Blue Jays lose it 7-3 here. You're listening to Jays Talk across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show and Josh with you. And, you know, we usually get to the text in the next kind of segment here, Josh, but I do want to answer this one. Sean from Kitchener, he says, is it a problem that I would feel better about Matt starting tomorrow than Ryu? I want to know, when you guys talk about the circle of trust for bullpen pitchers, what do you think about the circle of trust for starters? Is Ryu penciled in as a loss right now? And can you put a $20 million pitcher on the bench? And can you skip a $20 million pitcher and pitch Ross Stripling instead? It unfortunately really makes me start thinking of Tanner Roark with sunk money. Look, I'm not going to say this is a Tanner Roark situation by any means just quite yet, because Hyunjin Ryu has been, because of the body of work over the course of his relatively speaking long career, right? So I'm not quite there yet. Fair, right? I think Sean was more speculating than anything else, but I think the question of can you afford to bench someone essentially who is getting paid $20 million a year, I think that's a fair one. I think if this squad has shown us anything, this particular Blue Jay squad, is that things are not necessarily given, they're earned. So I wouldn't be surprised if after Stripling had, you know, another encouraging outing in relief, maybe they do give him another starting shot, because he was relatively effective before the oblique strain. But I mean, it's true. I mean, you wonder how that kind of thing can affect just relations inside the clubhouse now that we especially know. I think, I forget if it was Shy or Arden, but one of those guys wrote a pretty great piece on sportsnet.ca about how like the starters pick things up from each other in their kind of off day routines, and how they've gotten this camaraderie together. Now, I'm not saying that would necessarily ruin that, but I just, you know, you wonder if Ryu getting quote unquote benched would affect any of that kind of stuff in any way.
Well, it's a delicate situation because, like you said, we were talking about it, there's a couple of years left on this deal, but right now you're in the heat of battle here with two clubs now ahead of you in the standings. And if you feel as though at least the next time through the rotation, Ross Stripling or Thomas Hatch, and I think it's more likely to be Ross Stripling because I think Hatch is supposed to pitch tomorrow in AAA, so maybe you could figure that out if you make that determination tonight. You scratch him and he's on standby for the next time through the rotation when it comes to Ryu. But like at this stage of the game, you can't be worrying too much about hurt feelings or bruised egos or anything like that. And it's just a simple case of who gives us a better chance to win a baseball game with them on the mound as the starting pitcher the next time through the rotation. And if the answer is Ross Stripling in your mind, then that's who you have to start, and you have to figure out, you know, how to sell that to a pitcher who I'm sure isn't going to be particularly thrilled. But wins, I think, right now have to matter above all else.
So the last time we spoke about Ross Stripling, we were on the new Ross Stripling. Is that correct? I don't think we had gotten to three news yet, right?
So yeah, new news. That's right.
Right,
yeah.
New. So maybe in the near future we see a new Ross Stripling, or maybe this is the new Ross Stripling. He went in relief of Ryu, three innings, two hits, allowing two hits, one earned run, which was the solo shot to, I believe, Miguel Sano. He allowed a walk, got two strikeouts as well. Your thoughts on Stripling? I mean, I thought, like, all things considered, he settled down pretty quickly, and given the situation he came into, which was just a mess after Ryu, and we just spent a whole bunch of time talking about it, but I mean, all things considered, with Stripling coming back off a pretty pesky injury, right? Obliques can be so tricky to maneuver and so tricky to work around. And I know he didn't look super impressive in his first outing back off the IL. But hey, I mean, today I was pretty encouraged by what I saw from Stripling.
Yeah, and I think that the fact that he looked pretty good and acquitted himself very nicely I think just pours gasoline on the fire that, you know, why not look towards him as opposed to Ryu the next time out? And it might not work out, but you know, Ross Stripling does have a baseline of some success this year, starting ball games for the Blue Jays. And a guy, you never know how a guy's going to adjust to a relief role, how he's going to adjust coming off of an injury, like you talk about, tricky, nagging, like an oblique. But I thought he threw a number of good curveballs. I thought his fastball command was pretty good. Shook off that home run that he gave up early on in the outing and gave them three pretty quality innings. And like, do you look at it as maybe you piggyback Ryu and Stripling going forward now? And like you have Stripling ready to go at the first sign of trouble with Ryu. Maybe that's something that you look at. And you know, Ryu gives you three clean innings, and instead of letting him see the order a second time or take any chances, then you just bring Stripling in and bring in a different look. Maybe that's a look that the Blue Jays consider, because it wouldn't be conventional, but maybe there's something to be said for that kind of partnership providing better results than either of those two guys just starting a game traditionally themselves.
Yeah, it's not as though Ryu would necessarily be, you know, like opening, to use that term that's been coined relatively recently, right? He's not exactly opening for Stripling in such a scenario that we're positing here. But yeah, I think I just like the hook on Ryu going forward, no matter what the rest of the season is, no matter who you're playing, doesn't matter if he lines up against the Twins or against the Rays, it doesn't matter where he is in the rotation, 1 through 5. At this point, given the body of work we have seen, basically since the All-Star break, the hook on Ryu has to be the quickest hook imaginable, which is really unfortunate. Like unless he is truly looks like his old self and he truly looks like he is dealing out there, if he is struggling even a little bit, and I know Charlie Montoyo very often gives the pitchers a little bit of a longer leash, the starters I should say, but boy, I mean that can't, like, just with the team afford right now in the midst of a playoff race, you just cannot afford to be giving guys longer leashes if they're struggling basically even a little bit, which is crazy to say about someone like Ryu.
Yeah, it really is. And the fact, like, we've talked so many times about how crazy this Blue Jays season has been, and that Hyunjin Ryu is lower on the trust totem pole than Steven Matz in September as the Blue Jays are legitimately in a playoff conversation. That, to me, could be the biggest surprise, yeah. The most shocking development of the season. You could have given me 5,000 to 1 odds. I was trying to think of a high number, but right, like not an insanely high number, and I wouldn't have taken that bet. Like I thought Steven Matz could be decent, but I still assumed Hyunjin Ryu would be one of the top two arms in this rotation, and obviously things have changed. So I guess you look at it as it's easy to be glass half empty right now because there's still $40 million and 2 years left on the deal. But the fact of the matter is he's been pretty terrible since the All-Star break. And the Blue Jays have still mostly been winning games because they have other quality options in the rotation. But still, you would really like for him to be pitching better and finding it, because you know you still want 5 quality arms in your rotation if you can manage it. And on paper, the Blue Jays certainly have that. But right now, they've got 4 guys who are basically producing time in and time out for the most part. And one guy who, it's basically a roll of the dice. You're at the craps table. You're betting the house on which whatever is in your gut, and you're just hoping that it ends up panning out. And that's not a particularly good feeling to be in, I'm sure, as a fan base. And there's no way it's a good feeling right now for somebody like Hyunjin Ryu, who's never really had to endure anything like this in his major league career.
Another not particularly good feeling, Josh, betting the money line on the first 5 innings of this game, which is something I did tonight. I did that. Yikes. So, yeah, hashtag yikes for me. No more in-game betting, I think, is the lesson here. But you're listening to Jay's Talk, presented by your Ontario Honda dealers, Show and Josh with you. Yeah, Hyunjin Ryu going 2 innings pitched, his shortest outing as a Toronto Blue Jay, which comes after 2 1/3 innings pitch on September 11th against the Baltimore Orioles. But again, you're listening to Jay's Talk. We'll step aside. When we come back, we'll get to your text at 590-590, name and location. So still some time to send all of those in. Jay's Talk continues after this. Show and Josh across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Essentials for a game. Bat, ball, glove, radio. This is Toronto Blue Jays Baseball on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
What a nice round of applause for Josh Donaldson. He's back at Rogers Center for just the second time. and Donaldson lifts his cap, acknowledging the Toronto Blue Jay fans, which embraced him immediately.
That's Ben Wagner with the call as we welcome you back to Jay's Talk, presented by your Ontario Honda dealers. Show and Josh with you for about 20 more minutes. Jays lose it 7-3. And Josh, it's funny. I mean, I asked our technical director here, Josh Santos, to grab that clip, if only because, I don't know about you, when Donaldson came up to the plate for the first time this evening, he got that pretty raucous round of applause, all things considered. And I got to say, I was surprised. Like, not because I don't think he deserves it, right? I mean, he was much beloved by the fans, specifically over his, 4 years in a Blue Jays uniform. And certainly towards the end of it, it was a little bit more injury plague than you would have liked. And he went on to play for the Braves, and now he plays for the Twins, signing a 4-year, I think either $91 or $92 million with the Minnesota Twins. And I gotta say, I was just surprised by the vocal reaction, let's say, a positive one, certainly, to Josh Donaldson's first plate appearance.
Well, so I remember being in the building when he came back in 2019 with Atlanta, and there was the video presentation, and that was an understandable moment. And I got no issues with fans showing love to heroes of yesteryear. And like, that era holds a special moment in the heart of a lot of Blue Jays fans of our generation, of people a little bit older than us, of people younger than us. It was the first time that the Blue Jays really made an imprint, outside of a few fleeting moments during seasons for 25 years almost. And Donaldson was a big principal in that, winning the MVP, everything kind of revolving around that. So I think until this team kind of moves on from that team and has some playoff success and wins a playoff series and is consistent like that, like, there's still going to always be that attachment, but it will fade further into the background with this team doing its thing. But you're still always going to get a round of applause, if not a bit of a standing O, when players like, when they were coming around, Edwin Encarnacion. I know Bautista never had that opportunity, even the year after when he was playing with the Mets and Phillies, at least not that I can recall, and obviously Donaldson as well. So it's just, that's part of being a fan. You're always going to be excited about seeing players that meant a lot to you over a particular era, and I don't think it's unique to Blue Jays fans, and I think it's kind of the beauty of what sports fandom is all about.
Sure, yeah. Josh Donaldson meant a lot to a lot of people. I remember the game where he won AL MVP. It was really exciting seeing him get the trophy on the field. Fans were going nuts. It's funny because the two eras of Blue Jays baseball are similar in a lot of ways in terms of how the roster is constructed, power hitting, Blue Jays bullpen, the starting rotation, all the different things we've spent basically the entire last 12 months essentially talking about. But it's funny because at the same time, for all the similarities that team and this team has, 2015-2016 era has to today, I would say that Josh Donaldson specifically kind of represents the idea that, like, the 2015-2016 ball club, real quick, who I think were, like, they were kind of bullies, right? Like, they kind of had, like, this attitude about them that this ball club does not have, and it's not a bad thing. It's just, that's just not how the clubhouse is, and maybe a less professional way of saying it is, that's just not the vibe that they give off, right? Like, this ball club today seems much more, they have a lot more fun, and they a lot more smiling in the dugout, and I know that kind of irks some people, but I personally like that kind of thing. But you go back to the dugouts of 2015 and 2016, and like on the faces of Encarnacion and Bautista and Russell Martin and Donaldson, it just kind of Tulowitzki scowls, a lot of scowling going on in the dugout back then.
Yeah, younger club, right? A little fresh in the face, I think, is probably part of it. That was a pretty grizzled, hardened veteran team that I think was aware that it was really their one run at it, especially in 2015, where they kind of captured lightning in a bottle. And 2016 wasn't quite the same, but they were able to really squeeze as much out of the orange as they possibly could. Whereas I think this team, there's an element of you're sort of playing with house money, especially at this point where your season was left for dead by many, like including us. We left it for dead.
We did.
We both slapped a DNR on this season, and we were ready to basically just say, well, like, let's see what happens here. But the playoffs appear to be pretty much just a pipe dream. And now they're really in a great position. And like, it doesn't seem like the pressure is that much of an issue to them, which, like, I think could be a bit of a blessing and a curse. Sometimes you want to press a little bit more in big spots, and then in a lot of situations it's probably advantageous where you're just playing loosey-goosey, free and easy, and just kind of letting things happen as they may. And that's why I'm not really all that concerned about you losing a ball game tonight. Obviously, the Ryu situation, as we covered at the top of the show, is concerning. But, like, this is a pretty, we talked about it all year long, a team that bounces back, resilient, I think, is one of the big adjectives. And just because they lost tonight, I don't think it's an indicator that, you know, they're due for a bit of a slide here. Like, I have a lot of confidence in their ability to bounce back from any adversity. And we've seen that time and again over this last 20 or so game stretch. So you shouldn't have anything but confidence that they'll be able tomorrow with Steven Matz on the mound to be able to do some damage and square this series up.
So like you mentioned, Josh, we spent a lot of time at the top of Jay's talk talking about Hyunjin Ryu. Again, he went two innings pitched, allowing five hits, five earned runs, one walk, one strikeout, the two home runs, which, as I mentioned before, back-to-back shots from Polanco and JD. Let's hear what he had to say. He spoke to the media, just finished up a couple of minutes ago via an interpreter.
Hey, Ryu, thank you for your time. But could you walk us through your start today, how you were feeling, and what led to some of the hard contact there for you?
Well, I thought I felt pretty good today coming into the game. But it seemed like I left a lot of my pitches over the plate a little too much, like the two home runs I gave up, and even the fly out to the center field that was over the plate a little too much. But overall, I just gave up a lot of hard hits.
Hyunjin, is there anything in common between what happened today and what happened in your last start? Maybe some of the inconsistencies you've had over the past month or so.
Yeah, firstly, I feel like I've just been giving up a lot of extra base hits. I've been leaving a lot of my pitches over the plate a little too much, more than I hope, and that resulted in a lot of runs in a single inning, and I think that's the struggle this month.
Is there any link or connection to the forearm issue you experienced in that outing in New York?
Frankly, not that I can think of, to be honest. It's just one of those things. Again, I'm struggling, and I just need to find myself and try to fight back through all these.
How do you think the best way to go about finding yourself and fighting back is, especially with such little time left in the season?
Yeah, I think finding the best of myself would be ideal. So my command has always been there for me. So trying to get back to my original self, and everything should fall to the right place again.
Hyunjin, are your recent struggles any more frustrating to you, you know, because you know that, you know, deep down you can be better than this, and you've proven to be better last season and earlier this year?
Yeah, obviously it's a little bit frustrating, especially as a starting pitcher, to have an early exit two games in a row. I mean, it's something all starting pitchers would be frustrated about.
And during a tough stretch like this, where you've had a couple rough outings, what do you tell yourself differently from a mental point of view in between your starts?
Yeah, the best way is to forget about the past and get ready for the next start. And so again, I got to forget about what happened today and try to prepare myself for my next start.
Certainly hope that Hyunjin Ryu, that's him speaking to the media via an interpreter, does have a short memory, as we'll have to see what the Blue Jays do with his upcoming spot in the rotation, whether we see him get piggybacked with Stripling, whether we see him get skipped, whether maybe it's just business as usual, Josh. We don't really know right now, but we'll have to monitor that situation over the coming days. Let's get to the text line, 590-590. Leave your name and location so we can give you a quick shout-out on the air. I see one here from Dustin in North York. Dustin says he's taking the glass half full approach, Josh. Okay. Dustin is saying, if you told me a few weeks ago we'd be 16-4 over the next 20, I'd take all of that. The last time the Jays got beat by an underwhelming opponent, the bats proceeded to go off the next handful of games. Shower this one off. Take care of business tomorrow. Enjoy the show. Keep up the good work, fellas. Thank you for texting, Dustin. And yeah, I mean, look, like you said, you and I were not particularly bullish on the Jays' playoff chances. And then they went on just an absolutely phenomenal run in the midst of a historic September, basically. So we talk a lot about how the Nationals and the Twins and the Orioles were the teams the Blue Jays needed to beat up on to basically secure a spot in the postseason. And look, today was a setback. But again, if you're going to take the glass half full approach, like Dustin did and like you did just before we got to the Ryu audio, I would say, tomorrow is Steven Matz on the mound. Good opportunity to bounce back.
Yeah, Steve Matz is going to have to be sharp, because as we saw tonight, if you're not sharp, especially the top portion of that lineup, I guess really 1 through 4 with some of the hitters, you know, Buxton and Donaldson and Polanco and Sano, those are quality major league hitters, and they will punish mistakes, and they can hit good pitches as well. So it's a lot of quality righty bats in there, and Polanco's not bad from the right side of the plate as a switch hitter. So Steven Matz is going to have to be sharp, but you should be relatively confident that he can be. I know he wasn't tremendous last time out against Baltimore. We talked about that postgame on Sunday about how much of a factor was it sitting for long stretches between innings with your team just putting up run after run after run, and he still gave them 6 innings, and he's still been really good since the 1st of August. And Bailey Oberg has a decent arm, but shouldn't be somebody that should inspire a ton of fear in Blue Jays fans or Blue Jays hitters. So you look at the state of affairs, and you should still feel relatively strong and confident about their prospects of taking tomorrow's game and then setting themselves up with, I believe, Jose Berríos on Sunday to go for a series win.
Yeah, if you can get quality starts, and I'm using the capital Q and the capital S here, if you can get that out of Steven Matz and more of that, more from that, from Berríos on Sunday, then I think you'll be in pretty good shape going into the next series starting next week. Back to the text line, Mike and Angus, he says, the more I see Nate Pearson pitch, the more I see why he needs to be a starter going forward into next season. Triple digits, that free and easy is something special. And he has some more stuff on third base and on the shortstop spot. But we haven't spent a lot of time talking about Nate Pearson tonight, Josh. And Pearson was, again, we talk about guys who have spent some time in over the, you know, over what, let's say 4 outings, 5 outings now for Nate Pearson since coming off the IL, since coming, you know, coming back up to the major leagues. He has been, all things considered, pretty good, right? And I think, and I know it wasn't the highest leverage spots. I understand that. So, you know, I think there's still a ways to go until we're having the Nate Pearson as a starter conversation, which probably, like Mike says, is not going to take place until next season. But your thoughts on Nate Pearson? Again, I was encouraged again by what I saw.
Yeah, he was good tonight. You know, he wasn't missing his spots the way that he has been really at stages throughout his entire big league career, on and off, mostly on, where he's just missing the glove by a pretty wide margin. I thought tonight, you know, he threw a couple of non-competitive sliders, but he kind of honed in, and then he got Sano on a beautiful one that dived straight down, and Sano waved over to the top of it. He was throwing 100, got a couple of called strikes at the knees. Very impressive outing. Again, like you said, relatively low leverage, so I don't know how much you necessarily want to take from it, but he's definitely ahead of Julian Merriweather right now on the pecking order. Julian Merriweather is a right now a mop-up guy, or somebody that you give an inning to if he needs some work and the game's not particularly close one way or the other. I think he got one swing and miss tonight on his slider and one swing and miss on his fastball. There's been some issues with spin rate is way down from the early part of the season, which I guess shouldn't be that much of a surprise considering the crackdown. His velo isn't quite as strong either. His fastball looks a little flat, and when it's pretty flat like that, not doing a ton, it's going to be pretty hittable, and it was tonight. He gave up a home run, gave up another warning track fly ball. So no easy answers there. I think, you know, he's just somebody that you get work when you can, but you shouldn't be pressing it in any situation right now, because I just don't know if he has the stuff right now to really reward you in spots of any meaning, because it could end up costing you a ball game.
Merriweather threw 11 pitches and 7 of those being strikes. And we had seen, I want to say it was Ben Nicholson Smith of Sportsnet.ca make the note over the last couple of days that Merriweather essentially has been on since he returned on that essentially like in almost in pen, essentially the 2 days of rest and then he pitches and 2 days of rest and he pitches and so on. But I wonder if they change that with only 11 pitches thrown tonight. I wonder if they change that a little bit depending on what the situation they find themselves in, either down or up big, either probably not tomorrow, but maybe even as soon as Sunday.
Yeah, he's not a guy that's going to be pitching on back-to-back days, maybe on Sunday, but like you said, it's all based on game flow right now, and I don't think you're bringing him into any baseball game that is, you know, anything less than 4 runs. It's got to be 4 runs or more, I think, for you to consider bringing Julian Merriweather and probably also to an extent Nate Pearson into ballgames. And that's why, like, Adam Simber getting used tonight was a tad puzzling. I know you just had an off day and always good to get some work, but now you don't have another off day until a week Monday. And, you know, four runs down in the top of the ninth inning using one of your leverage relievers. Like, I would have gone to Taylor Saucedo even in that situation. I don't know what the story is with Soria. That seemed like an opportunity where he could have pitched. I was a little bit perplexed that Adam Simber was pitching in the ninth inning of a game you were down by four runs.
Yeah, it does seem a little strange. And then, of course, Borucki got some burn as well. But Simber's usage was, like you said, perplexing, I think, at the best of times. But again, I think we'll have to see what the bullpen usage is tomorrow. And you got to also hope that Steven Matz, as we've been talking about all evening, is more sharp than Ryu. So more pitchers don't get burned, right? I feel a decent amount of pitchers for the Blue Jays end up going in this one, right? After Ryu, Stripling, Merriweather, Pearson, Borucki, and Simber, all throwing, basically Merriweather, Pearson, Brucky, and Simber all throwing an inning each. So, I mean, you would hope, I think, that Matz goes significantly deeper than two innings that Ryu went today. But you're listening to Jay's Talk, presented by your Ontario Honda dealers. Show and Josh with you for a couple more minutes. We'll step aside. We'll finish up on the text line, 590-590, name and location. And we'll hear from Charlie Montoyo a little bit of his post-game availability as well. But you're listening to Jay's Talk across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Vlad the Impaler, Vlad the Destroyer, Vlad the Conqueror. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and the Toronto Blue Jays play here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to Blue Jays Baseball, powered by Jack Links. You're listening to Jay's Talk across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Jay's Talk is presented by your Ontario Honda dealers. Show and Josh with you for a couple more minutes. Let's get right to the postgame audio. Charlie Montoyo just wrapped up speaking to the media. Here's a very small chunk of his postgame availability.
Hey, Charlie, these inconsistencies we've seen from Ryu recently and a stretch in the last few months, what do you think has been the main reason, the main thing going on with him?
His command. You know, when it comes to Ryu, it's all about his command. You know, when he's really good, he commands all his pitches. And right now, he's having a struggle with his command, so he's leaving a lot of pitches over the head of the plate.
And given the urgency of just a couple of weeks left in this season, does that worry you at all, or how do you approach that as a manager with someone like Ryu, who does have a track record but isn't performing right now?
I mean, when it comes to a guy like Ryu, there's always a chance he's going to make an adjustment and he'll be lights out next season, you know. I mean, next outing. So, you know, he'll be fine, but it's all about his command. If he gets it, which he could because he's done it before, he'll be fine.
There's a little bit of insight from Charlie Montoyo, Josh, into the situation with Ryu. It sure sounds like to me, I don't know about you, but it sure sounds like to me that even Montoyo and the pitching staff, Pete Walker and everyone else there, is still, I mean, they're obviously concerned about the command. So I guess they're not going to make a decision on this anytime soon. This sounds like something they're going to have to evaluate basically right up until maybe even the day before his next start.
Yeah, I guess there's going to need to be some work done here and some conversations. I don't know if it's necessarily just a straightforward thing where he's starting in his next scheduled start. I think there's going to be a lot of conversations that are going to need to be happening and see some work done, you know, his bullpen, how he looks, how everything feels, and assess and see if he's in a position where you feel like you're confident that he can give you a quality outing and see what happens.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely have to see what happens with Hyunjin Ryu. It'll be absolutely fascinating to watch. I know some people are already on the text line clamoring for Ryu to be sent down to the bullpen and Stripling to start and maybe even shutting down Ryu for the season. I don't think, unless something is seriously, seriously wrong with him, I mean, like an injury-wise, like he's torn something or badly strained something, I would doubt that we see him get shut down for the season. They're just not going to do that because you're still hoping he rights the ship at some point between now and basically a wild card game.
Yeah, he's not, outside of an injury, he's not getting shut down. Maybe you skip him one time through the rotation or a phantom IL to allow him to work on things. But he's not getting sent to the bullpen. Like, it's either he gets skipped in the rotation or he continues starting games if he's healthy. Simple as that.
Exactly. So always good stuff from my pal Josh Goldberg. He and I, just a note, we'll be handling Jay's Talk all weekend long. So we'll chat with you again on Saturday evening. But you've been listening to Blue Jays Baseball, powered by Jack Links. Send hunger down to the minors and feed your wild side. Hyunjin Ryu goes two innings, allowing five earned runs, two home runs back-to-back. And again, tomorrow, Steven Matz will head to the mound for Game 2 against the Minnesota Twins. Blue Jays lose this one, Game 1, 7-3. Game 2 goes at 3:07 p.m. Eastern on the Sportsnet Radio Network. For Tom, Ben, Santos, Josh, I'm Sho, and thank you for listening to another edition of Jay's Talk.